Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan here with us in Studio 3 for her monthly appearance as Attorney General Maura Healey. The Attorney General will be with us until 1 o'clock to take our questions and yours. You can email them at bpr@wgbh.org, tweet them at BOS Public Radio, or just call the Attorney General at 877-301-8970. Attorney General, good to see you.
Great to see you too, Jim. Marjorie, how
great,
are you?
Great to see you too, Attorney General Healey. You know, I want to start with something that really upset me, and you were a prosecutor for a long time.
The fact that Isaiah Thomas did not get named the sixth man of the year.
You were unbelievable. He came in second, though.
That burns me. I know, but as he says, statistics don't lie, and that should have been his. But.
So did you think, since you brought it up, did you think Isaiah Thomas of our team was not the son of Isaiah Thomas, the great Detroit Pistons? You thought it was the same family, did you not?
Well, I did, right? Because I grew up during the Pistons-Lambeer-Thomas Celtics games. He's not, but that was my first thought.
Yeah, he's pretty incredible.
He's incredible, and maybe they can steal one tonight.
He's about your size, by the way. Do you know that?
That's why I got to love him.
Yeah. Well, speaking of basketball, I always love that thing on Jim's show when he used to be on NECN when he threw the basketball and you twirled it in your finger for like ever. That was unbelievable.
I still haven't forgiven him for that.
No,
is that like riding a bicycle? Like once you learn how to twirl the basketball on your finger, you can twirl it forever?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much.
I remember also for those, this is when Maura Healey was running. I think you were in the primary against Warren Tolman at that point. She didn't know. I threw the basketball because I'd seen some, I thought, phony ad where she's doing this. Well, it turns out it wasn't phony. She started spinning it. And then I remember I turned to then candidate Healey and say, how long can you do that? And I say with disdain, she says, how long do you want me to do it?
Those were the days.
In any case.
Okay. Well, so for going something entertaining and funny to terribly depressing, I wanted to ask you about this because you were a prosecutor and you are now the Attorney General. This whole story, and Jim can read the stats, but that we learned this weekend about, well, I guess it was last week actually, that the FBI essentially was cooking the books on a lot of its forensic evidence involving hair samples. And they also, in the New York Times editorial this morning, talked about, you know, ballistics were not as accurate as had been thought and testimony about bite marks. And it just really upset me because we're all across the country. We're hearing these terrible situations of police officers, and they're the minority. We know that, but shooting people, black young men, mostly. And you hear this about the FBI, and we've had a kind of a sullied history of the FBI in Boston, most flagrantly in the Whitey Bulger trial, where the FBI was in cahoots with Whitey Bulger, or certain members of the FBI were in cahoots. So what are we to make of the reliability of the FBI, and are they involved in state cases or not?
Well, you know, I read that, and I think there's more to read and more to learn about it, at least more that I want to learn about that particular issue. It goes to people's fundamental respect or belief in the process and the integrity of that process, and you better believe it. The federal government has an obligation to get that right. So whatever the issues were or are, they need to be addressed and addressed swiftly. You know, I'm heartened here on the state level. We do have a working relationship with the FBI, though we primarily make use of in our office state police investigators and also local police. And you know, I'm particularly mindful of the efforts most recently of the Boston Police Department. If you look at how they handled that situation a couple of weeks ago, I think they and District Attorney Conley are to be commended in terms of coming forward
with
John Moynihan shot the face
and releasing that video, because you know, I think we've seen other instances where things weren't handled as well, and they can sometimes tend to escalate. And I think that Boston could be and should be an example for a way to proceed. But, you know, important conversations, important dialogue on these issues right now. And I'm certainly committed to working with others in law enforcement and members of the community to make sure we're doing everything we can to get this right.
But one thing I wanted, because it seems to me, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, that if someone, say, is murdered in Boston or they're murdered in Framingham or whatever, it's often the state police that does a lot of the forensic work, correct?
Well, you have local and state investigators.
And state. Not the FBI.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Well, what are you saying? But I have a question. Here's where I'm confused. In this, I'll read from this New York Times op-ed. To its credit, the Justice Department reached an agreement with the Innocence Project to review FBI testimony about hair analysis in more than 2,500 cases in more than 40 states from 85 to 99. And then it goes on to say, of the 268 cases it's looked at so far, the testimony was fundamentally flawed. This is unbelievable. In 96%. So 40 states, according to this Justice Department analysis, have these cases happened in 40 states. Are we not one of the 40 states, to your knowledge? This is before you, obviously.
Yeah, it's before me. So, Jim, I'd have to look into that. Okay. I'm assuming that these were federal prosecutions that proceeded in the various 40 states out there.
I see.
Certainly something I'll look to learn more about.
Like Sarnaeff is a federal prosecution, obviously.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. The voice you hear is of the Attorney General, Maura Healey, who's going to be taking your calls and questions. We've got some emails as well that came in over the transom.
Actually, this is a good one to start with. Diane asked, my question is about the constant phone calls in violation of the Do Not Call registry. We all get calls from Rachel at Cardholder Services, numerous other commercial businesses. Even if we have registered our phone numbers, would Ms. Healey be willing to take these companies on? There is a phone number. You call a phone number. You can be on a do not call. I'm in the same boat, and I continue to get calls. What's the deal with that, and what does one do if they're the subject of one of those calls?
Well, look, it is so frustrating. I get the same kind of calls at my house and now on my cell phone. I encourage everybody, get yourself signed up for the Do Not Call registry. That's the first thing. Certainly, whenever somebody is reaching you, if you answer, ask them, of course, not to call again. I often say, where are you calling from? And let them know that I'm going to make a report to the Attorney General's office if they don't.
Hopefully that'll work out. And by the way, I'm the Attorney General.
No, I don't say that. But,
I've said that, by the way.
You said that? All right.
Said, yes.
Good. All right. Well, I'll tell you, usually that's met with a hang-up. But I continue to hear more on this issue, Jim. And so I want to take a look to see what, if anything else, we can be doing. A little bit of this is whack-a-mole in the sense that it's hard to stay on top of. But we certainly should be doing everything we can to reduce and eliminate unwelcome or unwanted calls.
What number of yours, Maura Healey, do people call if they have that kind of complaint? Is it a consumer hotline number? We'll
sure.
get it in a second.
They can call our consumer hotline, and they should call our consumer hotline. And as with anything, if we identify specific businesses or industries out there or names that people are using on whose behalf they're calling on behalf of, you know, we'll make an effort to investigate and certainly go after them if we're able to.
We'll give you the consumer hotline in about 1 minute. One last question before we get to the polls. You oppose what is likely a question going to the ballot in 2016, the legalization for recreational purposes of marijuana. Why, Attorney General?
Well, I come at this for a few reasons, but probably the biggest reason for me driving my position on this is I have real concerns about the effect it's going to have on young people. As you know, Jim, I'm somebody who supported decriminalization of marijuana in small amounts. I also support medical marijuana, and we need to right now get this right and get this implemented because there are people out there who need access to that. But when it comes to full legalization, I've not been in the camp of supporting full legalization because I think the jury's really still out in terms of the effect it could have and can have on young people. And that's why I come down on the side that I come down on.
But you know, with law enforcement, you know this, almost everybody right down the line in law enforcement was opposed to even medical marijuana. I remember talking to the Attorney General Martha Coakley when she was here about that.
All the DAs, too.
And the DAs, and also they were not in favor, I don't know if it was every one of them, but most people in law enforcement were not in favor of lessening the crime either. And I think, I mean, you must have smoked pot once or twice in your life, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. No,
okay.
I have.
And here you are, the Attorney General.
Right. And I'm also somebody who supported decriminalization and supported the medical marijuana bill. So I think I've shown a willingness to be flexible on this issue. I just think that right now I have real concerns about what this is doing to young people, what the lasting effects of this is going to be. It's one thing for adults, but I have real concerns about, you know, how this plays out for young people. And it's
even
why
though they'd
I
be treated just like liquor. If you're under 21, under any proposed law, you wouldn't be able to buy it. But
I don't think alcohol helps young people either.
Okay.
So.
But here's the thing about the young people argument that always gets me going is that you talk to any teenager, they will tell you how easy it is to get marijuana right now. And it's in some ways a little bit, you have to do a little more maneuvering to get the booze, unless you're going to steal it from your parents, you have to get someone to buy it for you or get a license or that kind of stuff. So I'm always amazed by that argument because if you legalized it, at least you would know what the marijuana was. There would be a little more regulation, we would presume. I mean, I'm sure there'll still be a black market, but there won't be as much of a black market. So with all these kids able to get marijuana now, why is it going to be any harder for them to get it when it's legal? And it would be better regulated marijuana.
Well, I still don't think that that justifies it or makes it right. I mean, there are a lot of things we could legalize. We could legalize cocaine or heroin. We could legalize dissemination of child pornography. It doesn't make it right. What I'm concerned about is the effect that access to marijuana is going to have on young people. In terms of the black market, it's also sort of interesting because in Colorado, and this is just an experiment, yeah. Colorado's had legalization for a little bit now. And what law enforcement in Colorado reports is, despite legalization, they've not seen a drop in black market activity to the point where other states have now sued Colorado to say, we've got a real problem because people are leaving our states, going to Colorado, and then coming back into our states and trafficking high amounts. So, you know, I think all of this bears noting. And as I say, we'll see where the debate goes. But at this point, I don't support legalization.
But just one last thing on this. Why is it right for the government to turn otherwise law-abiding citizens, and I don't think anybody thinks cocaine and marijuana are the same or heroin and marijuana are the same in terms of their addictive qualities or in terms of what they do to the person, because that's what the government's basically done. You know, we've had this whole generation of people that smoked pot in college and went on to become law-abiding citizens and would like to be able
President
to—
President of the United States.
Exactly. But the
well,
government—
he did more than marijuana,
the government,
as we know.
Because of hysteria about, I would say, hysterical attitudes about marijuana, has made law-abiding citizens into criminals who want to, in their own home, use marijuana. That's my problem with this.
Well, I think that those individuals have an ability right now through decriminalization. We've certainly seen use and an increase in use. If you walk down the street, I mean, I don't know how it is. It's amazing to me when I leave Ashburton Place, I will be walking down the street and waves of marijuana all of a sudden right up there around the state house.
It's Those
a,
are the
really
state
reps. It's state reps. Gotta work.
I knew I was going to get in trouble with that comment. But look, I'd love to come back and talk to you more about it. I believe that we should have a serious look at the health and medical effects on young people, and we should really account for that in this process.
By the way, the Attorney General's office just provided that number that we promised you a minute ago. If you have a consumer complaint, 617-727-8400, or you can go online to mass.gov/AGO. Let's take some calls.
I just want to really quickly say we're getting a million emails. It was not the inventor of Segway who went off the cliff. It was the guy that was the CEO or the head of the company. Dean came, and the inventor is still alive.
In New Hampshire, right,
yes.
Exactly. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Richard. You're in Haverhill. You're on with the Attorney General of the Commonwealth. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Jim and Marjorie. Attorney General, you are sure a breath of fresh air. Recently, Partners Healthcare, they added 70 doctors to their staff, and they claim that won't raise the price of healthcare. Also, the new CEO still wants to take over the Lawrence Memorial Hospital in Medford and the Melrose Waco Hospital, Melrose. Do you have any authority to stop that, Attorney General?
Well, you know, the issue, Richard, you raise on healthcare is really an important issue. I heard from so many people that healthcare costs such a huge issue for families, for individuals, and certainly for businesses across this state. And I believe I do have a role, Richard. My role is to make sure that we're doing everything we can to help contain costs while still ensuring access to quality care. With regard to the particular partners transaction on the North Shore, I think at this point, in the aftermath of what's happened with the South Shore transaction, we need to wait and see what Partners is going to do next. And my position has been that they should first demonstrate an ability to contain costs, reduce costs, and hit the pause button, which is what their CEO has represented that they're going to do with respect to further transactions. In time, that could come before our office for review. Just recently, I took the initiative of filing legislation 2 weeks ago, Richard, that will give us, I think, the added teeth to be able to stop a proposed acquisition or merger if I think it's not in the best interests of of consumers.
Speaking of bills, Richard, thanks for your call. Electric bills, we read almost every day, are going through the roof in this state. Why, number one? And number two, what are you doing about it, or what can you do about it?
This is such a huge issue, right? And people really got whacked this winter. Part of the problem is the price of the actual commodity, electricity itself, is way up. And there are certain things that we can control and certain things that we can't control. But with respect to what we can control, I'll tell you what I'm doing, is being active and aggressive. We've got a couple of actions now pending before FERC that challenge the amounts that utilities are charging with respect to transmission line activity and how that those costs are getting passed on to consumers. I'm hopeful that we'll be successful and we'll find a way to return as much as $180 million to consumers. I supported what the Department of Public Utilities did last week when it said if you're a consumer and you change the supplier of your electricity, you go from Eversource to Grid or another supplier out there, that you're not going to get penalized with a recalculation going back in time. You know, it's not the largest amount of money, but it's still something. So that's good. And my job as ratepayer advocate is to make sure that we're taking a hard look at any and all costs that are getting passed on to consumers, individual homeowners, and also businesses, to make sure that they're not passing on unnecessary costs. So we're going to continue to be active and certainly received any number of complaints and calls about this in the last several weeks. So.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, you mentioned, what, $180 million. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's huge. But in a smaller scheme, something that aggravates a lot of people, and I have to say I'm in that category, when you see that a guy who runs Eversource, used to be NSTAR, is merged with Northeast Utilities, if I'm correct, is making, what, $8 or $9 million in a monopoly. There's no competition. Essentially, people know what that means. Do you have any ability to, unless the board members or the compensation committee has violated some law, do you have any power to review those kinds of salaries? And if not, could he be paid $80 million to run a monopoly? What's the law on that, Mark?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, the next time they come before the Department of Public Utilities asking for a rate hike, I'm going to make sure that we are there making sure that any excessive compensation isn't being passed on to ratepayers as part of any proposed rate hike. I mean, shareholders at the end of the day can decide how they want to spend their money and how they want to compensate an executive, I suppose. But my hunt and my charge is to make sure that excessive executive compensation isn't being passed on to consumers and that they're not footing the bill.
How do you know, though? But everything's so fungible. How do you know that – how does one determine that compensate – let's assume you deemed $8 million or not, whatever it is, $9 million now, excessive. Their contention would be, we're not passing any of that on to consumers. We're taking it out of – blank fund. How do you ever pierce that veil, Maura Healey? Can you?
Well, what we do is, you know, you get the documents, you do the accounting, you push, and you know, you investigate and you look at things. And that's what we do in these rate cases.
How'd that salary strike you? When you read that story in the Boston Globe, how'd that strike you when you read that this head of a monopoly's made, whatever it was, $8, $9 million?
Maybe I'm in the wrong business.
I know. Should have gone into electricity running, you know?
No, I love the law, and I love being attorney general, that's for sure. But it is a lot. It's an awful lot of money.
And then you have these little municipal light companies. There aren't very many of them, but they seem to do it for a lot less money, and I don't think their executives are picking up.
Well, and I think, you know, what this goes to is the larger issue of, we here in Massachusetts, we need to be doing everything we can to harness a variety of energy sources. You know, yes, I believe we need more gas, and there's a healthy debate on about that. But, you know, we need to look at hydro and wind and solar, because it's expensive living here where we do in the Northeast with the cold winters and the hot summers. But it's all the more reason why we've got to be innovative and looking to diversify our energy mix so that at the end of the day, you know, the market isn't going to whack consumers in one direction or the other.
That's the voice of Attorney General Maura Healey. She's going to be here with us until 1:10, taking your questions and ours. Our number again, 877-301-8970. What's the email address, please, Jim?
It is BPR, thank you for asking, at WGBH.org.
BPR at WGBH.org. Maura Healey will be right back. He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Brush. She's Marjorie. And more importantly, she is Maura Healey, the Attorney General, who's kind enough to say she'll stay an extra handful of minutes. Before we get back to the calls, you've had a pretty good relationship so far in a whole host of things, from basketball to addiction issues with the new Republican governor. He has asked for the full board of the Department of the Transportation Board to step down. There's been some resistance. I know you don't have formal power, but as a bully, Paul, as the Attorney General, do you support the governor's? He says, I essentially, the buck will stop with me. I want full control of this thing. Is he right?
Well, I support anything and everything we can do to get this right. But, you know, my view fundamentally is that, and until and unless we have true investment in infrastructure and funding for that and make that a priority, you know, that's more important than just changing out board members, though I respect and support his prerogative in doing that. I just think that it's a very important public discussion we need to have about our priorities and how we're going to fund
needed infrastructure. We need new revenue is what you're saying.
We need something to fund this week. I mean, I think we only have to think back on the last few weeks and months to know that we need to go in a different direction.
Not to mention, when you see the rust sort of encasing some of these Green Line cars coming down Beacon Street, it's really rather depressing. Our number is 877-301-8970. Let's go to Vinny in Arlington. Thank you for calling, Vinny.
Hi, Vinny. You're on with the Attorney General.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great.
Good. So I had a question. I bought my house almost 10 years ago, and I didn't put down 20%. And I was told when I reached 78% of my loan that my PMI would be canceled. It actually says that in my mortgage, PMI mortgage disclosure statement. And yet my mortgage company is refusing to take off PMI. And everywhere I've read all over the internet, you know, there's a federal law that they have to, but good luck trying to get them to do it. If they do it, if they don't, you have to hire a lawyer. I mean, at this point, I really don't know what to do now. I've reached 78%, and it's over $200 a month on PMI.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get it taken off?
Well, what's the name of your mortgage company?
M&T Bank.
Okay. So I'll tell you what, Vinny. Maybe we can
number?
Arrange yep. off air, and today's your lucky day. I'll have somebody. No, seriously, Jim, because we do this kind of work regularly in the office. We spend a lot of time working with people who've had difficulty with their mortgages, with their refinancing, with servicing issues like the one that Vinny is talking about. And there are certainly any number of instances where a company is not doing right by somebody like Vinny, and we'll reach out to them and we'll make it right. So, Vinny, we'll. We'll do that, okay?
Don't go away. One of our colleagues will take your phone number, and as you heard, the Attorney General's office will be in touch. So hang tight. Stay on hold, Vinny, for a couple of seconds.
DB in Brighton. Thank you for calling.
Hi, DB.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I have a question about how the Attorney General's office plays in protecting our environment. And what I mean by that is not making sure, you know, to stop polluters, things like that, but, you know, protecting the green space that we now have. I read somewhere Boston at one time had more than 100 ponds. Now we have 2. And so I don't know if there's any law about that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, look, protecting the environment is really core work in the Attorney General's office, DB. In fact, I have an environmental protection division that exists specifically because of a statute that gives us the power and the authority to take steps to enforce laws to protect the environment. And so there are any number of them out there that speak to conservation issues, endangered species, certain steps that people need to go through in order to develop properties. So there's an awful lot there. I'd be happy to connect you with our new Energy and Environmental Bureau Chief to speak more about specific issues. I care so much about it, DB, that I actually created for the first time in the office an Energy and Environment Bureau. And we'll continue to do things like we did last week down in Washington, which was testify before Congress in support of EPA's ability to regulate. And we'll continue to work on the local level in combating and taking steps against people who dump bad things in rivers and pollute our local environment as well.
DB, thanks for the call. Speaking of environmental regulations, as you know, sort of they're strange bedfellows. Larry Tribe from Harvard is representing some coal companies, suggesting that the President of the United States has exceeded his executive authority with some of these regulatory actions, which have caused places like the New York Times to say he's the best president for the environment ever. But it's premised on the same thing that Larry Tribe says he doesn't have the power to do. Who's right?
President's right.
Do you really believe he's right?
I think Larry Tribe is wrong there. I think the arguments that he's advancing are wrong. And we as a state have come in on the other side of that issue to say that the Environmental Protection Agency has the power and the authority to regulate in this space.
Oh, so you're part of this thing?
We are part of it. We did, along with other states. And, you know, I think this is an important issue. And let's remember, it was Massachusetts that many years ago, under another attorney general, brought the case, the real seminal case before the Supreme Court, Mass versus EPA, that basically said for the first time in the wake of George Bush's refusal to take action and regulate in this area, that they actually had to. And the Supreme Court ordered that. Really significant. We have a long and proud tradition and history here in Massachusetts of standing up on environmental matters, and I'll certainly continue to do that as Attorney General. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks for the call, DB.
Far be it from me to call Larry Tribe wrong, but I am. But I am in this instance.
Okay, let's go to Jonathan in Worcester. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello, Jonathan.
How are you? Thank you so much for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
I was just wondering, I'm sure you know about the recent spat of police brutality here in Worcester where a African-American male was accosted in the cell. The department says that's their policy not to release the tapes. I was just wondering if there was any plan for maybe on a state level to get those released.
By the way, I don't know about the attacks in Worcester. Do you know about these?
Jonathan, I think you're speaking of the incident. There was an arraignment a couple weeks ago. Back in December, I believe the allegation is that a Worcester police officer taking a suspect into custody into an actual cell is alleged to have assaulted physically and verbally this detainee who is African-American. He has been charged by the Worcester County District Attorney's Office and is being prosecuted, the police officer. But certainly as somebody who's been both a civil rights attorney and a prosecutor, I take these allegations and these issues very seriously. And, you know, as I said earlier, I'll certainly be looking to make sure that that as we review this, we're taking the right steps to ensure that people's civil rights are protected.
Thank you much for the call. You know, speaking of civil rights, you were kind enough to join me on Greater Boston about 2 weeks ago, and I asked you about a position you had taken in a debate that I moderated with you and Warren Tolman when you were running for the Democratic nomination. You both took issue with your predecessors and your former bosses' position that she didn't have the jurisdiction to take a look at the shooting of Ibrahim Todashev, the man who, according to the FBI, along with Tamerlan Tsarnaev, were responsible for the triple murder in Waltham that preceded the marathon bombing by 18 months. You both said that you would have done otherwise. I asked you about it, and you said transparency is always important. So my answer remains yes at this point. I need to get an update on where things are on that particular matter before I make any decisions. Do you know more than we knew when you knew when we saw each other 2 weeks ago?
You know, after you raised this, Jim, I went back and looked, and here's what I know. That matter was investigated by the Florida state authorities, was also investigated by the United States Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. Both investigations exonerated the police officers involved, and those reports are public. We also have going on here in Middlesex County the prosecution of that triple homicide, and that is currently underway. I am mindful of
what does it mean underway? I mean, Tamerlan Tsarnaev is dead. Ibrahim Todashev is dead. So how is the...
Well, I understand that that matter is still before the Middlesex County District Attorney's Office. And so I wouldn't want anything at this particular juncture to compromise the investigation and prosecution handling of that matter. But I am going to continue to review it, as I said, and come back to you. And tell you what I'm going to do.
And by the way, we should say for people who are saying, why are we even asking this question? There were two Massachusetts state troopers in or around the apartment at the time of the shooting. Can I just get back to this? I was totally unaware of this. The Middlesex County DA still has an active case involving the Waltham triple murders from whatever that was, September 11th of 2011, I guess it was. There's an active case.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
And so does that mean theoretically that they believe, well, as a former prosecutor, well, you're the lead prosecutor in Massachusetts, if the two men who are responsible for it are dead, should we then assume that they believe that there may be other people who are involved in this? Do you ordinarily continue an investigation if the alleged perpetrators have been killed?
Well, I don't want to speak to the specifics of this particular matter, but... Suffice it to say that I'm reviewing it.
And, okay. Thank you.
You know, here's a good question for the Attorney General. I don't know if this is in your purview, but you hear about this all the time. Robert from Watertown wants
It doesn't matter, really, whether it's in my purview or not. I've come to learn.
Yeah, okay.
It's all in her purview.
But this is a good question for all of us who are upset about these unpaid summer internships, especially for college kids. Mm-hmm. He wants to know why it's legal for companies to hire interns and put them to work and not pay them.
Yeah, well, as a general matter, they have to be paid. There are certain exemptions and exemptions for that. But, you know, I think it's important right now, particularly as we face summer and as somebody who worked, you know, every summer through high school and college, it's important for people to go onto our website, look at their rights as employees for the summer so that they're treated fairly. One thing that I'm focused on right now that relates to the issue of workers is we have got this new earned sick time law coming out. And for those who don't know, your listeners, last year the voters passed through a ballot initiative a law that provides now access to earned sick time for workers across the state. And it's estimated that approximately 1 million more people are going to qualify for earned sick time. A lot of us already have that through our employers.
Oops.
We have a little bit of a sound problem here. I think we're off. I believe we're off the air and something else is playing. It's playing in our ears at least. Okay, now we're fine. We're fine.
Now
sorry,
we're fine.
Attorney
sorry.
General. Yeah.
Sorry.
Say that again, please. 1 million people.
Earned sick time. Important law that the voters passed last year through the ballot. Up to 1 million people are now going to qualify in Massachusetts. Many of us already have this, so it's not going to change anything for us or for employers. But it will require us in the Attorney General's office, since we are going to have to enforce it, to implement some regulations. And so we've been working very hard in the last few weeks to get input from businesses and employers and workers' rights groups as well to craft workable, sensible regulations that will go effective with the law come July 1st.
You know, speaking of regulations, before you go, we only have 60 seconds left. The governor was here the other day, and we asked him about the continuing failure to open any of the medicinal marijuana dispensaries. He actually had his staff person check and said, I hope I got this right, that the first one is scheduled to open this summer. Are you under the impression that we're finally about to actually have some of these things that the people voted for, two and a half years ago? Is it imminent as far as you know, Attorney General?
I don't know that I'd say it's imminent. I know that there is a heightened urgency and that the governor has made clear that he is working to get this done. And certainly my office will work with the administration on implementation so that we can finally get this in place and up and running.
You two are really getting along, aren't you?
The governor and I?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Have there been any major policy disagreements so far?
They both played basketball.
We know that. It was
Harvard.
Great.
Right. No. You know, I mean, look, I think that both of us and our teams are just working hard. We've got a lot of issues confronting us here in the state, and I think it's really important that all of us in government come together and try to craft workable solutions for people. So that's what we're Great. About day in and day out.
Now, by the way, if you're on hold, if you stay on hold, we will take your number and give it to the Attorney General's office, and they will be in touch. If you send an email, it will be forwarded.
Yeah, especially poor Robert. He's got a $500 a month electric bill. He's ready to be pulling his
we
hair out.
We will forward it to the Attorney General's
office. We will take care of Robert.
Maura Healey, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on.
Attorney General Maura Healey joins us every month for Ask the AG. Thank you also, Attorney General, for coming in. Coming up, WGBH Arts Editor Jared Bowen joins us to talk about the local art scene, from sloshed Shakespeare to sober performances from James Franco and Jonah Hill. That's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.